Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman here with the head coach, Gus Bradley. Gus, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I can't complain one bit. I know that I'm excited for this week because it's another chance to get one in the win column for your football team. And there's a lot of fans that are like, when's the team going to win? When's the team going to win? And I just keep telling them, I said, you know, you got to have patience. This team is getting better. And they're like, how's it getting better? I mean, you know, there's some fans that are kind of, I don't want to say angry, but, you know, they don't have the ability sometimes, and I'm not calling them ignorant or anything, but sometimes they don't have the ability to see certain things that are signs of good.
Right. Well, I look at our fans as, first of all, we talk about we want a team with spirit. Well, our fans have spirit and fire. That's good. I also think our fans are very competitive, and that's a good thing too. So, you know, I completely understand and completely get it. And, you know, we're just trying to do this as fast as possible, get our guys to be the best that they can be as fast as possible, and then see what happens. And, you know, I love that passion.
You would probably worry more if they didn't care.
Well, yeah.
I mean, fans, it means they got an opinion, they've got a passion, they've got a love for their football team.
Well, I know. I know when I came here and interviewed, and they were talking about the fan base and looking into it and stuff and seeing you know, how the fans support the team and the passion they have for the team. And I knew it. And, you know, that was one of the attractive things, that the fan base is so passionate. And now we got to create even more passion by what we do on the field.
Fans sometimes will watch a game, or they'll be at a game, and they'll see, you know, the after-game reaction. Guys on the field greeting a guy maybe they play college football with after the game, and, you know, one of the guys, or, you know, maybe he's a Jaguar player, he greets a guy, and he's smiling across the field. Or maybe a locker room, you know, a reporter says, okay, the locker room was certainly didn't appear to have the locker room of a team that just lost. Well, my experience in that locker room in Tennessee, that was about as quiet of a locker room as I've ever gone into. And you could tell that your football team was hurting after that one.
Yeah. You know, every time you go out there and have a chance to you know, go for a victory and you don't succeed, it stings. But I agree. I think and that's why I think I made the comments that, you know, I think the team is counting on me in that situation to help them through that, you know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's okay, you know. It's okay.
Is it a good thing sometimes, yeah, isn't it, to let it hurt?
To hurt and have that pain. And if you use that pain to come back even stronger, it can be a good thing. And, you know, that's how we looked at it. And our team. But, you know, that black cloud, it hung over us. And, you know, but we have to respond and get back to work. And they say, get the bootstraps ready to go, and let's go.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you next, was how long did it take them to respond? Because, I mean, sometimes as a player, the only way that you know to get better or to end up removing some kind of bad taste is to get back to work.
It really is. And, you know, a lot of times, regardless, don't even take the outcome of the game in consideration. You know, it takes them Sunday and then Monday and then Tuesday and Wednesday. As you know, Logs, you're still sore. You're still beat up. So on top of that, now you have the emotion that went into the game and, you know, all those things that factor into it. So usually sometime by Wednesday, you know, it's lifting when you can get back out in that practice field and go to work.
But winning certainly provides validation, which would be something great to accomplish, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, the players sense it, and maybe not on the outside. They're seeing validation throughout. It's just that, you know, everybody wants one bad, you know, and that's why we really just got to stay the course. They're seeing that the process that we have has allowed them to get better. The next question is, has it allowed us to get better enough to get that victory?
Well, the one guy that really stands out getting better, and we were talking about this a little bit ago. At the end of that game, it's a two-possession game, and you guys are down. And I never felt like you guys were completely out of it because of the play of your quarterback. Your quarterback is so young, but he seems so much more mature beyond his years as far as the ability to withstand pressure. Am I reading that right?
No, you're exactly right. It you know, all these situations are new. So as a coaching staff, we're seeing it firsthand as well. All right, here we go. We just got an onside. We got to go move the ball. And, you know, and just his demeanor and how he approached it, you know, he's special that way. So, you know, there's a lot of good signs, a lot of good things that are taking place. It's you know, and those situations provide those opportunities.
Well, and the one area that I thought was real special about him in that game was just his game and moment awareness. And there were multiple instances in that game that I was just sitting there shaking my head going, you know, and I'd like to give credit to your staff, but I can't. I mean, sometimes quarterbacks just have that. Like when he comes forward out of the pocket presence, he comes forward and he breaks out of the pocket, and he's almost tap dancing along the line of scrimmage to keep his body behind the line of scrimmage to throw a forward pass. Scrambling up the field and all, having the awareness of where the first down stripe is before he starts his slide. The ability to not move his eyes from downfield to adjust in the pocket to buy time. I mean, all those things you just can't coach.
No, you know what? And I think that's what led to our decision. You know, this race to maturity, so-called, that we were on, is we started to see those things in practice. We saw that awareness. And, I think that's where we came to the conclusion to say, okay, we need to see, will this transfer onto the field? Because we were starting to see those things take place as he got more comfortable with the system.
How much better can he be with a running game?
It's so helpful to a team. You know, the good thing is about our team is that with Blake, we're seeing extended drives. You know, we're seeing 10-play drives, 11-play drives. You know, it's not three and out, three and out, three and out, which is a heavy strain on the defense. You're seeing extended drives, and whether you run or pass, that's a good sign. The difficult thing is we need to see those long drives turn into touchdowns. That's what we need. So, the run game, can you move the ball effectively down the field? If your run game's not effective, you can. But I think what gets you over the hump and where you see instead of 14 points where you're at 28, 30 points is when you have an established run game. Because off of it comes play-action passes that give you explosive plays that can put points on the board.
It's interesting that you talk about that because the one scoring drive that you had throughout the course of that game, which was the very first one, you had an explosive play, the 59-yarder to Clay Harbor. And so before you got to the, you know, two-minute situation where you're trying to hurry up and score a bunch of points, that was the one that gave you points and it had an explosive play.
Yeah, and that's generally how it works. And sometimes it's not, we've got to get 10 yards on this run. Or, you know, sometimes it's 3 yards, 4 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards. And then, you know, somewhere down the line, you're going to, you know, get that one that you break out. And, you know, that's what we challenged our mindset of our offense is to say, well, it doesn't have to be 0-0-3-2 and then that 16-yarder comes or 10. It can happen on the first play if we come out and with that mindset right away. So it does. It opens it up. And I think even our second scoring drive, there were some runs in there.
There was.
You know, and again, it's just that mindset, the strain that it puts on the defense when they know that you have to pass, it's just more difficult.
Yeah, the offensive line, you know, I thought played pretty well against Pittsburgh. Against Tennessee, I thought maybe they may be taking a small step back.
Well, you know, I think every team presents its own challenges. You know, up front, Tennessee with Casey, they had he was a very talented player. So at times, you know, maybe the double teams hung on him too long, and part of that was the talent that he has. But, you know, to protect, you know, 48 times you're throwing and 6 sacks, yeah, that's too many. But, you know, you look at, see, what was the cause? I mean, there was one Blake, he could have got rid of the ball. This person, you know, they were spread out. So, and that's why I think the run game, you know, if you have a run game, the D-line can't tee off every play.
How important is that word consistency in the running game? Because you talk about, okay, it's just one guy here, it's one guy there, to where you start getting plays. Because I remember listening to your press conference earlier in the week and you talked about how in the running game, I think you said you had like maybe 4 perfect plays in the running game throughout the course of the game. Is consistency a big part of that?
Well, yeah, and I think you know, when we're talking now specifically about the run game, I truly believe it is a mindset. It is a mindset to start the whole thing off. The offensive line needs to feel it, and then, you know, really it comes from the coordinator, the coaches, and into the whole team. So they have to sense that. But, You know, I think what we had 11 carries for 17 yards, I think. You know, at one point we had 11 runs and 14 passes, which you're trying to be balanced. The difficult thing is when it's 11 carries for 17 yards, that's tough, you know. And we just got to stick to it and not be foolish, but we got to allow it a chance to grow.
How is Toby Gerhart? I know he didn't practice yesterday. I don't think he practiced today, if I remember correctly. Does he have a chance to be back this week? And if not, do you go into this game against the Browns with maybe the same idea that you went into Tennessee with, where Storm Johnson will get some looks again?
Well, we'll find out more with Toby tomorrow. I think, you know, he's made really good progress. We'd like to have that foot completely pain-free. And, you know, just so, you know, if it's close and then have him go back and have a chance to re-injure it. So he's made really good progress. So I think we'll have a better idea tomorrow. If he's in there, then, you know, obviously Toby, we go with him. If he's not, then you'll see similar situations last week.
Okay, one of the big parts of your running game, because, I mean, I've had the good fortune of watching what has been, I think, one of the best blocking tight ends I've ever seen in Mercedes Lewis. And I've watched some good ones from Mark Bruner to Pete Metzlars, faced him multiple times back when Jim Kelly had that K-gun going and Thurman Thomas was just ripping it. That brings back a lot of bad memories, by the way. But how is he doing? He's on designated injured reserve to return. How is he doing, and when could he come back off of that to help a running game?
Sure. Well, he won't be back till after the bye after our game in London. So he's making progress. He's out in the field. He's running slightly. He's just getting back. In that part of it, so he'll have some conditioning, some running to do. So he's a couple weeks away. But, yeah, it sure be nice to get him back. Just, with Clay Harbor, he took over 70 reps last week. And that's difficult, one tight end spot. And then he's playing our U, he's playing our Y, and multiple different positions. And he's handled it well. But just to get a guy like Mercedes back would take a load off.
Well, to a question about Clay Harbor, because Clay Harbor was inactive, I think, the first three games. He had a calf injury, pretty significant one, missed, I think, 7 or 8 weeks. And he's come back. And has played very well, I thought, for a guy that's had to assume the roles of not only Mercedes Lewis, but also to continue on in that move tight end role that he plays. And he's able to withstand the rigors of playing a lot in the ball game. Is he handling it okay coming back from that injury? I mean, he appears to be.
Yeah, he really is. You know, he's in great shape. And I think give a lot of credit to Milo and our trainers. They've done a really good job, bringing him back. And I think, you know, we have this return to play protocol that really extends it, but makes sure that when he comes back, he's healthy to withstand some of these things. And he's responding nicely.
All right, folks, a photo of your student's lunch could give them the chance to meet the Jacksonville Jaguars. Post on Twitter or Instagram and tag @JagsPromotions or visit jaguars.com/lunch to enter by October 17th, sponsored by Fresh for Florida Kids. I'm going to talk a little wide receivers here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And this portion of the Gus Bradley Show is brought to you by Beers Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. And back here with the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, the wide receiver position last game in Tennessee was the first game in which you had everybody available. Cecil, Marquise Lee. How do you expect, or what do you expect out of that group rotation-wise, and what roles each guy fills going forward for your football team?
Well, they're all going to play, I can tell you that. I think when you look at all of them, Allen Robinson is really developing. You're seeing real fast progress from him. I think a guy like Allen Hurns is learning about consistency, doing some really, really good things, making some big plays for us. But that consistency part, I see him growing in that. Guy like Cecil, you know what you're going to get there and can count on him. And then, a guy like Marquise. I think Marquise, he's been out a little bit with some injuries. So that rustiness, you're seeing some of it. But, boy, I'm telling you, yesterday and today, he has stacked up two really good practices. He's kind of flipped the switch. You're seeing his speed. You're seeing his acceleration. And now just, tomorrow's going to be big for him and just keep improving. and then ace. They all have their roles. They all have, you know, we have packages or, you know, what we hope to get them involved in. So we like to play them all because when you do, again, when you have opportunities to throw it like we've had, you like to have those guys fresh.
Marquise Lee, I remember going all the way back to training camp, and you probably remember the drill that I'm talking about. It was one-on-one against the defensive backs.
It was right in front of us, you and I.
I mean, I don't know if I ever remember a wide receiver having as dominant of a one-on-one drill against defensive backs than I saw that day with him. And when I watched that, I was like, wow, boy, I can't wait to see that on game day. So that's what you're telling everybody that you saw some glimpses of yesterday and today?
You know, I have. And you try to put yourself in his mindset. Here he is. He comes in, and he gets hurt, and he can't practice like he wants to, so it's difficult to learn the package. And then he sees other guys practicing and doing well, and maybe some frustration occurs, and then he comes back and, you know, maybe he doesn't get as many opportunities, and, you know, just that struggle. But it feels like his mind is more clear this week, and he's learned how to deal with it. That's the growing pains that you see sometimes. But, you know, I've got my fingers crossed on him just because the last two good days, you know, sometimes it hits people differently. But I think just he's been out there consistently now for a couple of weeks for us.
What thing is probably the most shocking to me is I remember in OTA's training camp and Allen Robinson wasn't practicing. And with a young wide receiver or a young player for that matter, of any position, rookie, that doesn't have the benefit of OTAs and training camp, you have major concerns for him about going into the regular season. And all of a sudden, you're watching Allen Robinson week in and week out start to be really consistent, and you can tell that the quarterbacks trust him. You know, Blake Bortles trust him.
Right, yeah, he's really done a good job. I just, now, maturity-wise, professionalism, Allen Robinson wants to be really good. And I remember the first game, he's almost robotic a little bit, and, you know, and he was trying to figure out coverages and how to run the routes. And you've seen that kind of taken out of his game. He just looks more at ease, and the number of reps that he's gotten, I think, has helped out. And just his comfort level, you know, I think he has a better understanding.
I think if I remember correctly, he has 30 receptions, does not have a drop, which is the highest number in the National Football League. That's pretty impressive for a rookie.
It really is, you know, and we would say that's playing with that clear mind to where, you know, just go out there and be your best. We're not asking you to be Calvin Johnson. We're not asking you to do anything. It's just, but we do expect your best. And it's like, okay, well, I can do that. And when they're at that level and they do that, they'll find out, you know, they can be productive.
Has Cecil bounced back from the fumble last week? I mean, a guy that, it hurt nobody more than him, and you could tell.
Right. Well, here's how I look at it. Yeah, a very unfortunate play and tough on Cecil. But, you know, he got a great pickup. And when a team comes back, and they go back down and score, and then they come back and get an onside, and then an opportunity score, then you know that the team rallied around that and just said, hey, you know what, let's go. We got to get this done. And Cecil felt that from the team. So, you know, and that's so important. But Cecil, he's, you know, he's a strong competitor, but a different mindset himself. I think he finally feels healthy. And when you feel healthy and you feel good about your body and where it's at, I think you just have a different look in your eye, and he has that look.
Allen Hurns, a couple weeks ago, had, three drops. Tough game. Makes a tough catch early in that game against Tennessee. You could tell that he was not going to let the defender knock the ball out of his hands early in that game. And then later in the game, he had a little bit of a stumble on a comeback, and the ball's intercepted. Are you seeing him be more consistent week in and week out in practice?
Yeah, you know what? I am. I think it gives you a sign of the plays he can make. That one is a third down play where he came back, a high ball, made a great play. And, you know, I think that's what we're seeing more and more from him in practice. And that's the challenge for him. Again, just be your best. You can do these things, you know. And I think, you know, for him, it's just that consistently level. But he's getting better as far as that aspect as well.
All right, when we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show, we're going to talk about the challenges this week with the Cleveland Browns defense. Mike Pettin, head coach, comes over from spending plenty of time with Rex Ryan, and we'll do exactly that here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
For single game tickets, season tickets or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. All right, we've got some open phone lines. We're going to take some calls tonight. If you'd like to get in, you can call 355-NFL-1 or outside the call-in area, 1-800-355-NFL-1. And our first caller of the night called on Saturday to a different radio show that I do, and he had a great comment, and he was trying to get in to ask you a question last week, but he wasn't able to get in. But we asked him to call back this week, and he did, and we'd like to welcome in Jody. Good evening, Jody.
Hey, Coach. How's it going?
Good, Jody. How are you doing?
Pretty good. You know how you northern guys are? Y'all like to put a little inflection on what our southern guys down here call a certain word, but you crack me up every time you say Jaguars. So what my proposal to you is, just to put a little levity in the into the season, is if I fixed you a big old bowl of shrimp and grit, could I get a Jaguars?
Hey, I just had some cheesy grits, and up there for our players, we had some, and I loved it. So I know, you know what? These guys have been trying to teach you. I must be a slow learner, but is it Jacksonville Jaguars?
I mean, your arrow is pointing up. I mean, you've got what, a couple of rookies ranked in the top 10 in the National Football League right now. You know, I just planted my collard greens in the garden. So around Christmas, if you need some collard greens for Thanksgiving, I can give you some. But anyway, I think you're doing a great job, and I think you're going to have a long tenure here, but it just cracks me up, that's all.
All right, hold on. Let's give it to him one more time, because, you know, we were actually trying, me and Joe were saying, okay, because you do say Jaguars
I know.
So we're
Jaguars.
Yeah, Jacksonville Jaguars. Hey, how about that? Yeah, Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jody, your problem is with... Your problem is with the jag part, not the wars.
Yeah, not
see,
the wars.
See, we're backwards, Loggy.
The A.
It's the
I need
a
Jaguars.
Jag, like Mars Wars. Okay.
Jacksonville Jaguars.
That's it. That's right there.
Yeah, take that, man.
Now,
see, hey, I'm giving you the credit for this, man.
Anyway, y'all get back on with your show, and I love you to death.
I appreciate you, man.
I'm in the Attention XL kickoff party. If you want me to bring you some grits, shrimp and grits, I'll bring some 11 o'clock, and you send a runner down and have a little bolt before the game, and you'll win.
All right, Thank you, Jody. Thank you so much.
That's good stuff. Yeah, he called Saturday on a different radio show that I do, and he brought that up, and I thought it was just great. So you had him call. I said, you got to call back in on Thursday.
That's good, Logs.
You got a kick out of it.
Yeah.
You got a kick out of it. All right, so we talked about your offense, and this week you faced the Cleveland Browns. Mike Pettine, who cut his teeth really when he came into the league with the Baltimore Ravens when Rex Ryan was still a coach there. And I believe he worked underneath of Marvin Lewis. Rex did, and then eventually Rex took over, and then Mike Pettine got a position job, and then he followed Rex to New York, was a defensive coordinator there. Last year, you faced him against the Buffalo Bills, I believe,
yep,
where he did a really good job with the Buffalo Bills and then got the head job with Cleveland. It's his defense. What are the challenges of a defense like that your young offense will face?
Well, there's some good news, in fact, familiarity, because it is a 3-4 scheme, so very similar to what we faced the last couple weeks. Really, for the most part of the season. So, you know, that part is good. But every coach adds their own flavor to it. They have their own personality. Some play more man. Some play more zone. Some will pressure more out of it. So Mike has his own distinct personality with it. So they've done a good job. I think what's impressive on their team is I think they're +3 on the turnovers. So they're getting some turnovers on defense. You know, they've got some ball hawks. They've got some experience on defense. And I think, you know, it creates some opportunities for them.
They seem to play a lot of guys, and they seem to give a lot of different looks. And with Rex, I've used to see stuff that was sometimes almost unsound fundamentally. But I don't see Mike doing that.
No, he's, you know, but multiple fronts and multiple looks trying to create confusion. So, you know, it's been effective for him. You know, I think, you know, Rex has run it for years and Mike worked with them. And I think Mike was kind of the technician behind everything is what I've heard. So, you know, he's into that technique, into the fundamental principles. So he's trying to incorporate that at Cleveland.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Sally has a question from the West Side. Good evening, Sally.
Good evening, Jeff and Coach. I love my Jags. And, Coach, I just wanted to say, I've been laughing at you, too, the way you said Jaguars. Can you just say Jag like you say bag, and then you'll be fine.
Uh-oh, I can't say bag. I've got a lot of crap for saying bag, too.
But, you know, I love you, and I love, you know, I've been there for a long time with the Jags. I've watched Mr. Lagerman play football and thought he looked awfully good in his uniform, and he's still a good-looking man now. And
well, thank you very much.
I'll be there Sunday to see the rest of you, Coach.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. You had her call in, too, huh?
No, I did not. I'm glad she did, though. All right, so we now have the correct phonetics pronunciation. It's bag and Mars. Jag, Wars. Okay?
Yep.
So that's cool. We got it figured
out.
That's
great. It is. I know I get a lot of grief at home, and, you know, so.
Well, you're from Minnesota.
When I go up to Minnesota, they understand.
See, and that's exactly what I was kind of laughing about, because when you first got hired, you know, my mom is from North Dakota. And Detroit Lakes, a lot of family members around there, but my mom's originally from a little town called Langdon, and her sister lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and New Brighton, a little suburb there of Minneapolis. Yep. And so when I heard you talk for the first time, I'm like, I know that accent right there. And I guarantee he does not drink soda. He drinks
pop. Yeah.
There you go.
No, now I drink soda, huh, Logs? I remember I was in Colorado coaching, and we went to a grocery store, and a friend of mine was with me from Colorado. And there's all the groceries. And I said, hey, can I get a bag, you know, to put all the groceries, or can I get a bag? And my buddy said, hey, ma'am, he is not begging for this food. He wants a grocery bag. Yeah. And I said, oh, yeah. So it's kind of stuck with me, I think. I got to change it.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Browns defense. We'll also flip it over to the other side of the ball and talk maybe a little Johnny football right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jaguar fans, do you want your photo or tweet on the massive new Jaguars video boards? Hashtag JagsGameDayLive and be a part of the game experience, the social drive brought to you by the Nimnick family of dealerships. And yes, I am involved in social media now. It has been interesting, to say the least. All right, let's flip it over to the Cleveland Browns offensive side of the football, because the talk really in May with the Cleveland Browns was all about Johnny Football, a guy that you had up close and personal experience with through the draft process and the evaluation process. What did you learn that was maybe the most interesting thing about Johnny Football?
Well, he's extremely competitive, and you know, I think his personality matches on the field. You know, he's a risk taker. He'll take chances on the field. He can extend plays. He can, you know, all those things that you saw. And then when you visit with him person to person, he is. I gravitated towards him. I thought he was, you know, great interview, great conversations. So, you know, everything that he brought to the table when he came here and we had our visit was good.
When I was getting ready to watch some film this week, you know, one of the most interesting things I want to do is see exactly how they utilize him. Did they have any packages ready for him or anything like that? Because I remember there was a lot of conversation when the season started about Dick LeBeau saying, hey, look, we expect Johnny Football to be the quarterback. He turned out not to be, but then every coach after that would seem to say, okay, well, we're ready for packages from him. But there really hasn't been one, because he's only been on the offensive field for 5 snaps. One of them, he had a reception that was called back or negated because of a penalty. He had an incomplete pass, and the other 3 plays were basically handoffs. Do you still prepare for a guy like Johnny Manziel, that maybe there is some packages with him?
Yeah, you have to. First of all, every week you go into it and you know who the backup is and you watch film on him so that if he does come in the game, similar to what happened in Washington, that you're prepared. So, you know, we've watched film on Johnny. We've seen him in preseason, we know what he's capable of doing based off of film. So we have a package. We're ready for it. But again, with limited plays that he runs, you know, with only five plays, it's hard to get too much detail, but we have watched him.
If he does get on the field as a quarterback, do you change awareness up front or have your guys kind of change their mindset because of his ability to get out of the pocket, or do you change a call because of his ability to maybe get out of the play?
Well, I think you have to know that he's in there and that he has the ability to extend the play. The other thing is just, you know, some of the read option, you know, may force you to play a little bit different style. But, for him, you know, the way you pressure him or the way you bring pressures for him might be different than what you bring for Hoyer.
Okay, and Brian Hoyer has been the starter from the get-go, and he's got an impressive record as a starter for the Cleveland Browns. He's 6-2. He's coming back from an ACL injury. He was named the starter by Mike Pettine to start the year out, and all he's done is play pretty doggone good. I mean, I'm looking at his passer rating. I think it's right around 99, which is one of the better passer ratings in the National Football League. In fact, it's eighth. He's having some success as a passer.
Yeah, he is. You know what? And I thought he was impressive last year, you know, in a couple of games that we saw of him. He did a nice job leading that team. And, I think this year now he's got, seven touchdowns and one interception. So he's playing really efficient for him, making good decisions, and understands the whole philosophy of what they're trying to get accomplished offensively. Hey, we're going to run the ball. Make no mistake about that. We're going to use play passes. We'll have some drop back. And he understands that system and operates really well within the means of that.
Kyle Shanahan is their offensive coordinator, and he comes – I mean, he's worked with his dad in Washington. He was with Gary Kubiak in Houston, and if a lot of Jaguar fans may be wondering what kind of an offense he runs, just think back to when Gary Kubiak – and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but think back to when Gary Kubiak was the offensive coordinator or the head coach – and also pseudo-offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans, and Arian Foster was at his best. He really believes in running the football and then play action off of that. Is that right?
That's right. I think it stemmed all the way back to Coach Shanahan, Mike Shanahan at Denver, you know, with Terrell Davis, and then Gary Kubiak was under him, and Kyle was there, and then they went to Houston, and he brought Kyle with him from Denver, and, you know, that whole system evolved from there. So, yeah, if you're familiar with Coach Kubiak and the style of offense they ran at Houston, very, very similar to what they're doing in Cleveland.
When I start building my game sheet for game day, you know, you fill in all the different names, and I was filling them in, and I knew Ben Tate was their running back. They got him in free agency. And I knew that he'd missed some games. He had a knee injury. He missed two games. But I didn't really know who was behind him because, you know, on highlights, you know, it's not very often that you get to learn a lot about everybody. But as I was doing the chart, I'm looking at Terrence West, who was a third-round pick for them out of Towson, and then a free agent undrafted rookie from Alabama State, Isaiah Crowell. And I'm looking at their numbers, and all three of these running backs all have over 200 yards rushing and a yards per carry average that's very good. Yeah. So all of them are getting rocked.
Right, yeah. And when you have a good offensive line up front, experienced offensive line that has played together and they operate well together, it gives backs opportunities. And similar like Terrell Davis, right? And then it was, Mike Anderson.
That's right.
You know, and then he came in there and did
By
really
the way, Mike Anderson, a little crazy thing. Mike Anderson did not play high school football until his senior year. He was in the band. Just an interesting tidbit there.
That's good. That's good, Logs. So with these guys, you know, if they play behind an offensive line that understands it, they've got a chance to be successful. And Terrence West was the leading rusher in 1AA, I believe, last mm-hmm. year. So a talented guy. We took a hard look at him. You know, they have some talent, and obviously with Tate back there, who's, you know, has played some years in the NFL and understands the zone scheme, you know, it benefits them.
Now, last week they had a – very impressive performance against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but it didn't come without a loss. Their starting center, Alex Mack, on a little zone play, had a defensive lineman fall down on his leg. He has a broken fibula. He was scheduled for surgery this week at some point. how much will they miss Alex Mack, a guy that you guys know very well because you tried to get him as a restricted free agent?
Well, anytime you miss a player of that caliber, it forces you to make some changes, and it's difficult. But I thought they adjusted really well. Paul McQuiston, you know, jumped in there and played at the guard spot. They moved the guard over, Greco over to center. And, you know, they still appeared to do pretty well. So it's always tough when you lose a player of that caliber. But, you know, it seems like they've adjusted.
All right, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that offensive line because the Browns have what might be one of the best offensive tackles in the game today, Joe Thomas, who's clearly taken his game up a notch, and we'll do exactly that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
When it comes to flavor, go the whole nine yards. Go for Goldfish Crackers. They're tasty, fun treats that come in multiple varieties of deliciousness, so don't drop the ball. Grab the Goldfish. It's the official snack of game day. I think I did that better than you did.
You sure did.
Than you did last week.
You did.
All right, let's take a phone call here. We've got Joe calling in from downtown Jacksonville. Good evening, Joe.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I pack Goldfish at my kids' lunches every day. They love it. One of the great things is I'm volunteering to coach an under-9 girls' soccer team, and we haven't won a game yet this year. And, you know, Coach, I understand some of the pressures I get from these parents and stuff, but they're all developing. We're coming close. And the last game, I realized I made a mistake. I didn't have somebody mark the best player on their team. When we play them again, we're going to win. And, you know, I just try to remain positive and do that. And me and Bryce are going to be in the stands, and we're going to do it Storm Davis style.
You almost got it in, Joe. We were ready for you this time. A little fun there. The offensive lineman I wanted to talk about was Joe Thomas because Joe Thomas, an incredible record of production. He was a first-round draft pick for the Cleveland Browns back in 2007. He started every game of his National Football League career. He has a streak that's going on, which is 7,242 snaps consecutive that he has played, which is the longest active streak in the National Football League. I respect the heck out of that.
Yeah, a very, very good player. Just very crafty, very wise on their run-blocking schemes. You know, Logs, he'll have a head-up player on him. He tries the inside reach, cut him off, lift up his left arm, grab his arm, hold him from making the play, you know, but it can't be seen. Just enough, yeah. And, you know, does a great job of that. And, you know, it's a lot of wisdom. You can tell that he's played that many snaps.
Yeah, he was impressive to watch because, you know, over the many years that I've watched Joe Thomas and haven't seen him all the time, but seen enough of him, though, I've always believed that he was an excellent pass protector, but he's really taken another step up in the importance of his run blocking and really put an emphasis on it. And when I watch him play the game now, he kind of reminds me of one of the guys that I played against, and I remember the first start I ever had as a defensive end. It was against him in Cincinnati, Anthony Munoz. And I got taught so many tricks in one game that you just put away in your book of knowledge because a guy like Anthony Munoz, a guy like Joe Thomas, they know every trick in the book. It should be a great matchup with Clemens and Joe Thomas because both of them know some tricks.
Yeah, you know what? And those type guys that have played that long for that many years, a lot of players try to emulate them. So I'm sure there's a lot of left tackles in the league watching Joe and seeing what he knows and what he's picked up and you know, how he takes care of his body, because to play that many snaps and at that high of a level for that many years, it's an incredible stat.
All right, while we're on the position of left tackle, because a lot of people are wondering how Luke Jokel is progressing, and because when they came out, a lot of people drew the comparison to Joe Thomas. About the same size, the athletic gifts that they have. How is Luke Jokel progressing in what really is his rookie year, because last year he only had one start at left tackle, and this year he's getting ready to make what will be his 8th start at left tackle this week?
I think he's doing a good job. It's a learning process now, but every day is for him. I was just down there today, and they were doing pass rush. And, you know, yesterday Clem and Brancher were going against him, and you can see him, I mean, very competitive, And you see some of the mistakes maybe made a week ago against those guys, you're not seeing. And it tells me that, boy, just as he gets more and more reps, the bar is going to raise. And he's just highly competitive, so important to him, wants to be great. You know, all those attributes that you're looking for, he just needs game experience.
Yeah, and it's so important, and really you can't get it anywhere else is game experience, because I remember the expectations of being a first-round draft pick. I mean, people expect you to walk into the door and be a great player right away, and sometimes it takes time.
It does take time. I know we had Russell Okung when I was in Seattle, and it took him some, you know, a couple of years to get really, you know, a routine down and things like that. So I think Luke's ahead of the pace and learning every week.
All right, we come back. I want to talk a little bit about the Jaguars defense right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman with the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, with your defense this past game at Tennessee, you had a little bit of a mixture going on at cornerback. Demetrius McCray, Dwayne Grotz were kind of rotating in there. Is that battle still playing out to where these guys are going to kind of continue to do that?
Yeah, I think you'll see them both on the field. You know, with Demetrius, he really stepped up, you know, in that Pittsburgh game. I think really showed signs of improvement and how he developed from practice squad up to being active and part of the 53. So he did a nice job. And I think with Grazi, when he came back from that injury and had to, you know, kind of battle his way back into it, it was really helpful for him. And I always believe that if you show it in practice and demonstrate it in practice and you play well enough, we're going to give you opportunities on the field.
I'm trying to remember back to the game at Cleveland. A big win. Cecil Shorts had the last minute catch, I think 40 seconds to go on the clock at Cleveland, which obviously was a big moment for him being an Ohio guy, Mountain Union guy. And one of the other things I remember about that game was Josh Gordon, the tremendous wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns. And I'm not trying to bring up bad memories, but the Cleveland Browns don't have him back in the lineup this year. They have Miles Austin, who's a former Cowboy, and then they have a former Cincinnati Bengal, Andrew Hawkins. Obviously, you're not going to get that kind of a production out of those two guys that you would normally get out of a Josh Gordon, but what do you see in those two wide receivers?
Well, I mean, they're different styles of receiver. One very fast, Hawkins, you know, extremely fast, along with, you know, at times you see Benjamin, and they can really, really run. And with that play-action game that they have, if the linebacker bites up and then is responsible to take one of them on an over route or, you know, a deep over, it's very difficult because of their speed. So maybe not the stature of Josh Gordon, but extremely fast. And Miles Austin, I think we're all familiar with him, played for many years in Dallas.
Been a couple Pro Bowls.
Yeah, and so he's a guy I know they trust and they count on. They know exactly what he can do.
Is Jordan Cameron their tight end, their biggest threat because of their affinity for play action? Because,
yeah.
I mean, the tight end sometimes gets lost in traffic.
Yeah, he does. You know, he's a guy that is a Pro Bowl tight end as well. And he's that, you know, play that U spot for him. And very athletic, very good in the open field. You know, you just see him progress and get better and better with all his opportunity to play. So definitely a guy that we need to be aware of.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll wrap our thoughts up and kind of exactly see what Gus Bradley's pregame speech might be to the team prior to the Cleveland Browns game. And we'll do that on the Gus Bradley Show right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Last segment here. And Gus, prior to this Cleveland Browns game, do you typically talk to your team the night before the game in long fashion? And is that, and I hate to say speech, but I mean, when
right.
you talk to your team and you really want to reach them, is that done the night before the game or the day of the game?
Well, you know, we have meetings Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, two on Saturday, and, you know, not on Sunday. But I think every head coach is different. Some head coaches, they might meet once a week, you know, with the team, you know, during the week, and then they get together on Saturday night. We meet every day, and there is some sort of a message, some sort of direction every day. So, you know, by the time we get to Saturday night's message, it's very simple. Very short, very simple message. Although the meetings are long, the defense, offense, special teams. But as far as my message, you know, by that point, they're like, okay, we got a pretty good feel for this. And it's more just to get their mind right, relax, get a good night's sleep. But there's always some sort of message.
And when you deliver those messages, you like to use PowerPoint, don't you?
Well, it differs. You know, I think that's, you know, I think you try to really reach your players any way you can. So sometimes it's highlight, sometimes it's no PowerPoint, and times it's PowerPoint.
And right after we get done here, you're actually going up for the Football 101 for the women's people, right? Up here.
Yeah, that'll be no PowerPoint, no video. That'll be all just talking. So that'll be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Will it be anything close to maybe a speech that you give your football team tonight?
That's probably not what they're looking for.
All right. Well, look, we appreciate all the callers, and we really appreciated, I believe it was it Josh?
Jody.
Jody. And so we expect next week, after you have a soda and some shrimp and grits, that you're going to be rolling Jaguars right off your tongue. Thank you, guys.